Welcome to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning. This is Leslie Dorries. Yes, I know I sound a little bit weird, but it truly is Leslie Dorries today. Today, we're going to be talking about sex and marriage, and I bet I just got your attention. And no, that is not an oxymoron. Unfortunately, it is one of the most common problem areas in marriage. Some people don't like the concept of monogamy because they believe it is impossible to have good sex if you've been with the same person for years. But there's also research that says married couples have more sex than single couples. Unfortunately, that doesn't matter if you aren't one of those couples. Sometimes issues around sex are really about the overall health of the relationship, but that's a topic for another today, for another day. A few weeks ago, I had a client ask me if the amount of sex her partner wanted was normal. It reminded me of a Baby Blues cartoon I used to have on my refrigerator, where the husband was reading a newspaper article and he says, "Look, the average couple has sex 2.6 times a week." And the wife says, "Well, does it specify whether the couple is newly together, has children, or whatever?" And the husband says, "Well, no, it doesn't." And she says, "Well, it should. It sets up unrealistic expectations." And I think that's what was going on with my client. Because in reality, we can interview thousands of couples and find the average number of times they have sex. And that would be a completely meaningless number for you if you're either not having sex enough or feel like you're having it too often. And like in other things, it isn't necessarily the quantity of sex you have, but the quality of it. So many things can impact this, and therein lies the problem for so many of you. So joining me today to talk about this important and very interesting topic is Chris Maxwell Rose, independent sex educator, massage therapist, co-founder of Pleasure Mechanics, and co-host of Speaking of Sex. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Now, this is one of those things where everybody's interested in sex and nobody is talking about it. Or they're searching the internet, they're getting all kinds of information, but maybe it's not accurate information. So can you tell me what you think most people are missing when it comes to good sex?
Ooh, a big question to start. I think the biggest thing that is interfering with people's sex life is stress. We all have really busy lives, we have endless to-do lists, and we bring our stress home with us and then are surprised when we can't get in the mood for sex. But what the body tells us is that it's very hard to get aroused when you're stressed out. And so a lot of people need to have a strategy to transition from their everyday life into the pleasure zone, into being in the mood for sex. And you can use a lot of things for this: yoga, dance, any form of relaxation. Our favorite is couples massage because it's a way of connecting with your lover, sharing quality touch, and getting the body in the mood for sex. And the thing is a lot of people let this go too long. So they stay stressed out for weeks and months on end, and then they're on vacation and they can't even relax.
or they engage in what I call vacation sex, which is usually great sex because the stress isn't there. They're able to focus on their partner, and then they wonder why they can't translate that back when they go home.
Right, right. And so this missing step, I like to think of it as you need to relax first and then get turned on, and then you can build arousal towards orgasm. And so many people just try to skip right into initiating sex, and their partner rolls over and is like, "Oh, not tonight."
Well, and isn't that one of the things, because I know that some of that is male-female difference. And I once heard somebody, I really wish I could remember who said it, but they said that foreplay starts when the last orgasm has finished. So it's like we're in a constant state, or hopefully a constant state of potential foreplay.
Right. We call it staying warm, so it's easier to get hot. And that forces you to look at your entire relationship. Like, how are you treating each other outside of the bedroom? Are you flirting with one another? Are you actively seducing one another? Or are you just treating each other as functional roommates and as co-parents and as, you know, strategy partners in life and not really enjoying pleasures of life together? And so that's one of the things we really recommend to couples, is to start seducing one another in your everyday life, sharing everyday pleasures, enjoying being together. And so you actually want to have sex with one another.
Okay, Chris, now I've got listeners jumping up and down. Can you hear their feet hitting the floor? About, we don't have time to do this. We work, it takes, we drive, we commute to and from work, we have kids, we have bills, we have to worry about the laundry. When are we supposed to seduce each other? And oh, by the way, we have children and they think that's gross.
I totally hear that. My wife and I have a 3-month-old baby right now. So one of the strategies we've been using, and we're calling carpe momentum, seize the moment.
I love that.
Because it really doesn't have to be this long, drawn-out thing. It's really about choosing and prioritizing pleasure in the everyday moments in life. And so if your husband comes up behind you while you're doing the dishes and kisses your neck, you have a choice there. You can brush him off and say, ugh, check the oven. Is the casserole ready? Or you can sink into the moment, yield your body into his, and enjoy that kiss. And if you take these moments every day, they add up to what we call the culture of your relationship. Do you have a culture of pleasure where you're allowing one another to give and receive pleasure with each other? Because if you don't do that, then you can really easily just get caught up in the stress. We all have it. And if you want a great sex life, you have to prioritize it. That's the bottom line.
Okay. Now therein lies an interesting question. What if one person wants a great sex life, but the other one either is or really has maybe some long-term issues around sex that maybe, and I see this sometimes in my office where, they've either never really experienced a pleasurable sexual experience, or they have in their head that it's wrong or dirty that they should enjoy what their body does.
Yeah. Well, that's a big question. I think one of the concepts we really try to promote is that we are each independent sexual beings, and you are responsible for your own sexuality. And then your relationship is where those sexualities overlap. And so you do have to meet your partner where they are. And a great sex life can look like a lot of different things to different people. And you open the show by talking about frequency of sex. And I really challenge that notion. Is it frequency of intercourse or is it frequency of affectionate touch that matters? What does an amazing sex life look like to you and to your relationship in this moment of time? Because it's always changing. Our sex life looks really different now than it did 8 years ago, and it'll look different again in 2 years from now. And so it's about meeting each other over and over again and saying, how can I serve you now? What does your body need? How can I give you pleasure? And if that's just a foot massage in front of the TV after a long day, it still counts. It still counts as pleasure shared and as intimacy and as intimate touch. And that goes just as far in your relationship as really great rough sex on your vacation. It all matters.
Well, and that's, and I kind of like the idea because it fits in with what I talk about all the time of having a vision and a plan. But what do you do if you're one of those couples who's kind of fallen into the, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it's Tuesday night, you know what that means, honey? I mean, it's kind of like, and I got to tell you, I love my husband to death. We've been married for 28 and a half years. And, but at one point in time, he approached me and he goes, and he was joking. And it was like, wooga, wooga, baby, want to get lucky. And I just looked at him and going, yeah, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
So what do you do if you're one of those couples that, it's the same place, it's the same, okay, you touch me here, I touch you there, 10 minutes later, we're all done.
Yes. You need to diversify. You need to get out of ruts and start experiencing the variety of erotic energies that are available to us. And so a lot of people fall into what we call the sexual script of their relationship. You know how to please one another, you kind of rush through it, you get to the end, and you check it off your to-do list. And instead, you can really start thinking about, what do I want to experience? What are my fantasies? What turns me on out in the world? Who am I noticing? If I read erotica, what catches my eye? And start actively cultivating the sex life that you want. And this doesn't have to be elaborate role playing. It can just be about teasing out certain elements from one another. Because we're not just one sexual being. A lot of people think they know who they are sexually, but what if you open your mind to being a lot of things in the bedroom? One day you're a relaxed sex goddess getting massage and oral sex for hours, and then another day you're rough and tumble. Like, those can both exist within the same relationship. And this is how you avoid boredom over a long-term relationship, is you actively cultivate being different things to your partner in different moments.
Okay, but how do you do that when you've got kids at the door? I mean, I know that this, you know, it's really funny because I actually got really lucky. I actually, when I first moved into my house, I actually hated this because there's a church not terribly far away that plays music at 9 in the morning, noon, and I think 6 o'clock at night. And it's canned music. It's not even real music. It's why I hated it. But before my kids could tell time, I would tell them, you cannot get out of bed until you hear the music, which meant my husband and I knew we had until 9 a.m. every Saturday and Sunday morning before the kids were allowed to come knock on the door. But if you don't have that, what do you do?
I think there are some strategies with parenting that we're eager to try out as our kid gets older, but things like childcare shares with a couple in the neighborhood where you swap off one night a week and you give one another a break. I think we have to get over this idea that to be a good parent means you have to parent 24/7 and prioritizing anything else other than your children makes you a bad mom.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. Oh, thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, you know, send the kids to, if you can afford it, a babysitter. If you can't, do a childcare swap with a friend. And your sexuality doesn't just live in the bedroom while you're actively making love. It exists when you talk to your partner late at night in bed. It exists over texts and emails, how you talk to one another. And so if you're constantly cultivating your eroticism, both for yourself and then with your partner, then those moments where you do have alone, you don't have to go from cold to hot. I think that's the thing. People schedule sex dates and then they show up and are just exhausted and want to watch TV.
Right.
You have to really set the stage in your relationship that you're actively cultivating your eroticism with one another, sending each other love notes, paying each other compliments. These are all really easy little habits to work into your relationship if you choose to prioritize it. And if you forget to do it, it just falls by the wayside.
Well, yeah, and I do think that that's one of the things that people have about the whole concept of monogamy. But I kind of like it because you talked about, yes, I'm having sexual encounter with the same physical person, but we can change up. Like you said, we can play different roles and we can take on different things. So yes, it's the same body, but it's not.
Right. Right. And we're changing all the time. You know, it's interesting in the areas of fitness or finances, we allow ourselves to set goals and know that we're going to change and work towards a goal. But in sexuality, the idea of setting goals somehow has a bad name or is a foreign concept to people. But if you can set goals like, I really want to experience the surrender to your erotic power, and I've really been fantasizing about this, how do we get there? And if you can have that conversation over a nice glass of wine or dinner and talk about it like adults and start planning that out, like, what would that look like? And be specific. You know, one of our online courses is about erotic spanking. And a lot of people think spanking is this very dominating, rough experience, but it can actually be very sensual. And to get the spanking you want, you need to be specific. Like, I want a nice warm up, and then I want you to call me this specific name. You start naming the qualities of the erotic experience you're going after, and lo and behold, it's much more likely that you'll get it. So we need to give ourselves permission to name what we want, name our desires. And that is a very hard step for most people, but it is the first step towards a fulfilling sex life.
Well, I just wanted to remind my listeners that they're listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net. And we're having a wonderful discussion about sex and intimacy. And if you want to comment or if you want to learn more about this, please feel free to contact me at Leslie Dorries at foundationscoachingnc.com or through Skype or through Twitter at Leslie Dorries. And we're continuing our conversation with Chris Maxwell Rose about sex. And I wanted to talk to you. Now, I'm going to get a lot of comments I know about spanking because that's an interesting thing. And the idea about fantasy. Because there are some people who think, well, isn't that cheating on my partner to be to be thinking, because you said before about thinking about people or situations that we've been in where we felt a level of sexual attraction and to bring that back into our relationship. Isn't that cheating?
You know, I was writing a book called The Fantasy Method that's all about sexual fantasy, and I surveyed our audience of thousands of people, and an overwhelming majority of people said, no, I don't mind if my partner fantasizes during sex, and this really surprised me. But I think what I encourage couples to do is have the conversation. Again, it's not cheating if you have permission, and so talk to your partner and say, do you mind if I fantasize about, you know, fictional situations? Maybe they don't mind, but maybe they do mind if you're fantasizing about your coworker or his best friend.
Right.
That might feel uncomfortable, but a celebrity or a fictional scenario might feel totally fine. And a lot of people enjoy using fantasy during sex. And one of the things I encourage people to do is check in. Is it fantasizing to take you away from sex you don't want to be having? Because in that case, you should really look at your relationship and the sex you're having and make sure it's pleasurable to you. But if it's fantasizing to enhance the sensations and to take your mind into your body rather than away from it, then that is a perfectly valid strategy for most people. And you can also fantasize about your lover, but just heighten the scenario. So you're not in your bedroom cluttered with laundry. You're somewhere else and your mind can take you there. Our minds are very powerful erotic organs, you know, it has a lot of power about how we feel. And so we should use them.
Well, I'm glad you went there because one of the things that I know you talk about and I think is really critical for my listeners to hear is the concept of our power over our own sexual chemistry, because I know that I hear this line all the time and it makes me crazy every time I hear it. I love my partner, I'm not in love with them. And what people usually mean by that is that they've fallen out of that infatuation, in love, rip their clothes off, throw them on the bed, you know, passionate sex that we usually have in the beginning. Or in some people's cases, they maybe have never felt that hot, passionate chemistry with their partner to start with.
Right. Well, I think when we think about chemistry in the lab, real chemistry, it's all about taking multiple components, mixing them together to make a new entity. And often our culture only puts value on this one kind of sexual chemistry, which is that hot, passionate, lustful, tear your clothes off, certain kind of chemistry. And what we know is that there are thousands and millions of kinds of sexual chemistry. There's so many different ways we can connect as sexual beings. And so if we open our mind a little bit and first realize that you're responsible for your own sexual chemistry within your own being, like so many people expect themselves to be turned on by this external force, but first you have to be at home in your own body and know what turns you on and know how you get aroused and know how you can pleasure yourself. Like, you are responsible for yourself first and foremost. And then you can bring all different parts of yourselves to mix with your partner's chemistry and deliberately create these equations. So like I was saying before, of like the surrender and the power, you both have to bring elements to that meeting if it's going to work. If you just show up and are like, all right, take me, baby, and don't bring anything to the table, you're not going to have a very good experience. But if you actively cultivate, what does it feel like for me to surrender? What kind of trust do I need to put in the hands of my lover if I really want to feel this way? And then your lover brings his erotic energy or her erotic energy and choose to create a specific chemical equation, you'd be surprised what you can create deliberately. And again, it's giving ourselves permission to deliberately create something instead of waiting to be swept away like this fairy tale myth that sexuality and pleasure somehow happens to you, instead of being an agent of your own pleasure and actively choosing it for yourself.
Well, and I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it completely, but how do we do that? How does somebody who isn't in touch with or is scared of giving that information to their partner, how do we get past that?
Well, it's a process. It really begins, and you mentioned this earlier in the show, the idea that pleasure is valuable, that it's not selfish, that it's not shameful or dirty. That's really the first step towards having a great sex life, is choosing to believe and committing to the belief that it's good for you. It's good for your relationship. You'll be a better mom, friend, coworker. All of these roles in our life are fueled by our sexual energy. And we have thousands of years of sex negative programming built into our culture. So we should never underestimate how hard that first step is.
Well, it's actually almost more schizophrenic, because we have this negative focus, but then we have everything that's almost hypersexualized. And you know, it's kind of like, is there a middle ground?
But if you look at the hypersexual messages that are out there, it's for a specific kind of person that looks a specific kind of way, having a specific kind of sex, and sexuality kind of belongs to that elite class, when it's really for all of us. No matter what you look like, no matter how old you are, no matter how long you've been in your relationship, built into your human body is the potential for sexual pleasure, intimacy with your partner, profound love. Like, these things are within us. And so I think it's getting over this media message of what sexuality is and going back to the source of what it was designed for, which is love and connection and pleasure. And all of these things are really good for you. And so it is something, there is a element of transcending the cultural messages about sex, which are schizophrenic, like it's shameful and dirty, but really sexy and powerful at the same time, and finding what it means to you in your life and locating the sex negative messages you might have received from your parents or spiritual leaders in your life that have told you that sex is bad and dirty, and really understanding what you feel about it. Does it feel bad when you connect with your partner and share pleasure, or does that feel good to you? Does it bring you closer? Does it make you stronger? And follow your body's lead on that.
Well, and you know, and again, I think that fits in with a lot of where many people are trying to go in society, like you mentioned before, about physical health, what we eat, how we take care of ourselves. It's about really listening to ourselves. And I like the idea when you talk about this, that I think it blows the negative stereotype about monogamy out the window. That, because I sort of have never understood that idea that if I commit to one person, it means I'm going to be missing all this sex with all these other people. Like, anybody would want to have, those people would want to have sex with me anyway, but that's a whole nother story. But it's this idea that we, you know, being physical is okay. Feeling pleasure is okay.
Right. And I think when I think about monogamy, most of the time when people talk about monogamy, it's like it's a jail sentence that
Right.
they've signed something off and they are in it for life. When what happens if we think about monogamy as devotion and as a choice, and that of all of the billions of people in this earth, I am choosing to devote my erotic energy to you. That is a powerful switch in your mindset. And if you can wake up every day and look at your partner and be like, yep, still choosing you, and I'm going to remind you why every day, that's a different relationship than feeling burdened by it. And then you can start looking at things like jealousy and flirtation and what are the parameters of your specific monogamy?
Right.
And it doesn't have to be a possession, it can really be a partnership and a way of doing life together. And that's worked for me, and we're 8 years in, so check with me in 20,
Well,
but of
and
course.
it's basically the same choice that I've made, and I'm going to tell you, my husband and I've been together for 29 and a half years, so it still works.
Perfect.
But so what I'm hearing you say, and what I want my listeners to hear you say, is that you don't have to settle for boring or bad sex. You can make a choice to commit to your partner, to commit to pleasure, and but you have to be willing to look at what the sexual issues are in you, within you and within your relationship, and engage in an honest discussion about them and really, really get down into the nitty-gritty and solve them.
Definitely. And the word conversation is key there. If you can't sit at your kitchen table and talk about sex openly with your partner, then that's where you need to start. It's not going to resolve itself in the midst of lovemaking if you can't have an honest, open conversation that feels fun, that feels sexy. If it feels like hard work to talk about sex, then there's work to be done just to clear the sex negative messages, to clear your assumptions, and to make talking about sex comfortable. Get there first.
Okay, so Chris, I know that you offer people a place to go to get that information. So where can they start to have that conversation first with themselves and then with their partner? Where can they go to find you and get information about how to do sex better?
Well, our online home is pleasuremechanics.com, and the site is full of free resources. We have an archive of 68 episodes and counting of our own podcast that you can listen to and use as discussion starters. We offer free sex advice, so if there's any question or struggle you're having, you can write to us and I write back to you and point you in the right direction or offer you guidance. And then we offer an online courses that give you multimedia resources to work with at home. You can watch videos, listen to audio guides, and read the books to explore new sexual skills and become a more masterful lover. And for listeners of this podcast, we'd love to offer 20% off any of the online courses. Just use the code EVERAFTER at pleasuremechanics.com.
Okay, Chris, thanks so much. All right, listeners, you now have no excuse. You get 20% off. Chris, you and I could talk about this probably all afternoon, and I would and I actually am going to be continuing to have a conversation about sex and intimacy, and hopefully, maybe you'll come back. But listeners, this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning, where we offer positive and proactive information on how to improve your marriage. So until next week, stay loving.